The comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are the opinions of the speakers and not the official opinion of the Hodgson Russ Law Firm.
Hey there, tax fans. Welcome to State Tax Talks with me, your host, Joe Tantillo. I'm a tax attorney at the Hodgson Russ Law Firm looking to explore the nuances of state and local tax law. Here on the show, our goal is to keep tax informative, simple, and fun. So if you're ready to talk tax, turn up the volume and dive into this episode of State Tax Talks. Thank you for being with us here today. We'll be discussing the ins and outs of sales tax. Today, I'm joined by Mr. Joe Endress. Joe is a graduate of the University at Buffalo Law School. He's licensed to practice law in New York and New Jersey. And most importantly, he is a partner at the Hodgson Russ Law Firm and our practice area leader for the Sales and Use Tax Practice Group. Joe has authored numerous written works on the topics of tax, including the 2019 version of the Guidebook to New York Taxes. And he writes a column for State Tax Notes called The Endress Assessment. For all of his hard work and expertise, he has been recognized with numerous awards, including most recently being named to the Best Lawyers in America list for tax law. Joe, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Joe. Very happy to be here.
Joe, we're going to dive right in. You are an expert in the world of sales tax, so I think this is going to be a fascinating conversation here today. So let's start at the very beginning, the basics of sales tax. Where does it all start? I like to use a fictional taxpayer who I call Johnny Taxpayer, and he's sitting at home right now going, I don't know anything about sales tax other than it shows up at the end of my receipt when I buy a candy bar. What do I need to know?
Well, I guess sales tax starts with a transaction, right? Something has to be sold in order for sales tax to apply. Something has to be purchased. The situation here is you might have a lot of listeners out there might be thinking, well, you know, I don't sell anything that's taxable. You know, lawyers like us, our services aren't subject to tax. But the thing that I love about sales tax is the fact that it gets you into every single industry. Because even if you're in an industry like ours where legal services are not subject to tax, the stuff we buy is certainly subject to tax. The pens, the pencils, the computers, you know, our purchases, we still have to worry about paying the proper amount of tax on the things that we buy, even though our sales are not subject to tax. So every business, if you're an operating entity, has to think about sales tax.
And when you think about sales tax as a business, I think one of the most interesting things and one of the reasons we love state tax law is every state does it a little bit differently, right? So when thinking about, you know, your contacts with a state that are going to subject you to that state's sales tax laws, where does it start?
Well, I guess it starts with nexus. You know, the idea here is that we're a big country. We're a big place. We have, 50 different states, and 45 of those states have a general sales tax. So if you're a business that is selling across state lines, you potentially have to deal with those 45 different tax jurisdictions. And then there are other jurisdictions you might have to worry about within them. You know, there are local jurisdictions that in some cases actually administer their own local sales taxes. So the compliance obligation can really be get astronomical pretty quickly. And I feel for, especially small businesses that are, using the internet to leverage their ability to broaden their customer base, suddenly could have this kind of Herculean task of having to, comply with numerous different state sales tax rules. And of those 45 different sets of laws, no two are identical. So you've got a lot of nuance if you're going to be selling into other states.
No doubt this is a nuanced area of the law. And for our taxpayers out there listening or our tax professionals, we're going to try to break it down here for you on the show today. So, Joe, let's start with that concept of nexus that you mentioned. What is nexus for the person out there listening?
So nexus is just it's a fancy word for connection, right? It just means that, do you have enough of a connection with a state such that that state is legally justified in requiring you to comply with its sales tax laws.
Right. And what is the legal basis for nexus?
Oh, boy. I don't know if I want to get really into the constitutional weeds of due process arguments, but essentially it's an idea of fairness, right? If I'm running a company here in New York and all of my people are in New York, all of my property is here in New York, all my inventory, all my offices, And even all my customers, let's say all my customers are here in New York, right? You wouldn't expect for California to be able to come in and say, hey, you owe us some sales tax, right? There's just no connection. There's no nexus to that state. So before another state can impose its tax on you, you have to pass this test of fairness so that the other state is legally justified in expecting you to comply with its laws.
Okay. So it's a fairness test. And if it's fair, that means that I need physical presence, right? Like if I don't have an office or some employees or a store in the state, like it's not fair to tax me, right?
Well, that used to be the case. Unfortunately, in 2018, we had a Supreme Court decision that changed all that. So, you know, if you were to ask me that question back in 2017, I would have said, yes, absolutely. You have to have a physical presence in a state before that state can subject you to its sales tax laws. And that was a good test because it provided a bright line rule that businesses could use to conform their behavior in order to limit their sales tax exposure. In other words, if I don't want to have to worry about sales tax into a state, I won't go in that state. I won't physically be there. And, you know, that allowed businesses to decide to control their sales tax obligation. And they would still be able to, under that rule, sell into another state and ship the product, the end product, into that other state and still not have to comply with sales tax obligations. The problem is that, you know, the states didn't really like this bright line test. The states started thinking, you know, businesses nowadays can start selling into our state, can generate a significant amount of revenue from a state, but still never have to pay sales tax or collect and remit sales tax from their customers in that state. So the states really didn't like it, and they started passing all these kind of crazy rules in order to chip away at that bright line physical presence test. You know, they started saying, well, if you have somebody performing services on your behalf in a state, an affiliate, well, then you have physical presence. Or they started saying, well, if you use the internet and you have a link that, you know, channels people to your website and you use people to drive people to that website, then you have physical presence. So there were all these little kind of rules that sprung up in order to chip away at it. And eventually one state, you know, South Dakota said, well, hang on. This makes no sense. This is all nonsense, all these kind of this patchwork of rules. Nowadays, you don't need to physically be in a state in order to make sales into the state. So we're going to challenge that physical presence rule head on. And that's what they did.
Wow. That meddling Supreme Court and those meddling states wanting their money from the sales tax. I mean, we see this kind of thing all the time where, you know, states are constantly going back and forth with the taxpayer in an effort to make the rules more conform to modern society. As we see these changes and we see businesses doing things differently, things shift. So that brings us to what the more modern concept of nexus is, which is economic nexus. Can you tell us a bit about that, Joe?
Yeah, so the idea there is, as I said, you really don't need to be physically in a state to conduct business in that state now with the internet. I mean, that's the crux of it. And so the idea of economic nexus is the idea that, well, if you make enough sales, if you not have enough economic activity in a state, that's enough to satisfy that kind of fairness requirement. That's enough to put the business on notice that it should be collecting and remitting that state's sales tax. So once you get above an economic presence, usually measured through the amount of your sales or the number of transactions that you engage in that state, then you have passed that fairness test and the state can legally expect you to collect and remit its sales tax.
And again, that nexus threshold is going to be different in every single state, correct?
Well, that's the problem is we kind of have a bright line test. Yes, now every state can apply an economic nexus rule, but they're all different. You know, the Supreme Court, when they changed the rule going from physical presence to economic presence, they didn't provide a bright line standard that would apply across the nation. Unfortunately, what they did was say, you know what, states, economic nexus is enough. Have at it, right? And then those 45 states that have a general sales tax, each and every one of them over the course of the next 2 or 3 years passed these economic nexus laws, these economic nexus sales tax laws.
Do you foresee a future, any future, wherein there is ever conformity between those laws? Or do you think that from a policy standpoint, it just makes more sense for the states to keep it unique to their own state?
I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me to impose a uniform standard. And, you know, in other areas of state tax, there have been pushes to impose a uniform standard for purposes of nexus. I'm thinking of like 30-day requirements for when you have a employee working in the state. There's some, you know, federal legislation that has been kicking around for many, many years with respect to that. And so, yes, I could see where the impulse would be. It'd be much easier for these mom and pop businesses that are selling over the internet to just know I have to follow one set of rules. So I can see the impulse towards that. Do I think that it's likely to happen? Well, that's another question. I mean, that's where you get into politics and Congress and whether they, you know, you have many different interests when it comes to sales tax and big states, large states, and whether or not Congress can agree to pass a law. That's an open question.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And I guess time will tell. But for now, it's complicated. And those who are operating businesses, in particular those who are remote sellers or have a remote selling aspect of their business, need to keep quite a few considerations in mind in terms of sales tax compliance. So let's talk a little bit about the type of things that you would like to keep in mind generally. If I, you know, I'm Johnny Taxpayer, I have my business, and maybe we operate in a handful of states, you know, where does it begin? You know, is tax paid on the first dollar you earn in the state, or is it after I cross this threshold?
I'm going to go back for a second and answer, add to my answer with respect to nexus. Sometimes I get asked, you know, why the policy shift? Why go from physical presence to economic presence? And we don't have to guess. You know, the Supreme Court specifically told us why this is happening in its decision in Wayfair. It said, you know, the court could not envision a world where the largest retailer is an online store. Now, they didn't mention it by name, but certainly they were thinking about Amazon. And so the reason for the change is that nowadays you can conduct even more business potentially online than physically in your own backyard or physically in the state where you actually are located. And so that's the reason for the change. With respect to the rules governing these new economic nexus laws, you know, is it measured on the first dollar? No, I would say no, right? If I'm a seller in New York and I'm selling into California and I have no other physical connection or presence to California, I'm just selling into that state. If I stay underneath California's economic presence rule, then I think I don't have to collect California sales tax. So it's not on the first dollar, but once I keep selling into California and I get above California's threshold, then I think at that point you have nexus. Not for any of those prior sales that got you to that point, but at that point you now have passed that fairness concept. You now have nexus with California, and at that point, you have to begin collecting and remitting California sales tax, which means that you have to track your sales, right? You have to know when you're going to trigger that requirement, when your sales are going to get above that bright line, and so you have to turn on the tax.
Interesting. So this economic nexus, is it, you know, once I have it, am I stuck? If I trigger economic nexus in California, do I have nexus in California in perpetuity?
That's a great question. And unfortunately, most states don't provide a bright line answer to that question. Now, you know, the cynic in me kind of says, well, yeah, they purposely don't provide a bright line answer to that because they want businesses to keep collecting and remitting their tax, even if there's a position that they don't have to. So the answer to that question is, in most states, it's unclear. But my answer to that question is, again, assuming you don't have physical presence in a state, after you go below that economic presence threshold for the amount of time that is covered by that state's economic presence law, then you don't have nexus. And so at that point, I think there is a sound legal position to turn off the tax. If you want to do that, again, the transaction is always subject to tax, right? Sales tax is imposed on customers. It's a customer tax. So that customer owes tax whether the business, out-of-state business, decides to charge it, right? So the customer is always going to owe the use tax. That's where the sales and use, that's the use part of it, even if the business doesn't collect it. But the question is, can the business turn off the tax and decide not to charge it if it doesn't have nexus with the state at that point? And I think the answer is yes.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned that the customer is really the one responsible for paying the tax. But of course, we see businesses are the ones getting audited for failure to charge sales tax. Have you ever thought about why the state, especially here in New York, why the state isn't just going after individuals for, you know, their failure to pay their, you know, small amount of sales tax on a receipt?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one word, efficiency. Right? It's much easier to go after one vendor and get all 100, 200,000, you know, whatever customers in the state there. It's one-stop shopping to go after the vendor rather than having to track down all those individuals. On top of that, there's another, again, this is kind of the cynic in me, but they can go after all of the individual customers in the state who are residents of the state, who are voters in the state, who have some, you know, political agency there, and this type of aggressive enforcement could have a backlash politically. Well, instead of that, let's just go after one vendor, which is, you know, much more efficient and out of state by definition. You know, they're an out of state business selling into California, my New York business selling into California. Well, I don't vote there. So it's both an expediency and a, you know, politically easier thing to do, I think, from an enforcement standpoint.
Definitely been a common thread through the short life of this podcast that the state is doing no favors for those who don't have any political capital, which is unsurprising to those of you listening out there. I guess it's kind of a no-duh moment, but it's always interesting to be reminded that it can often permeate our lives in ways in which we may not have thought about it, including sales tax laws. So circling back to economic nexus here for a second, you know, what is the measuring period for economic nexus? We talked about, like, once you have it, do you have it forever? We got an answer on that, but or a form of an answer on that. But, you know, for the time in which you're trying to determine if you do have it in the first place, am I looking at the calendar year? Am I looking at the fiscal year? How do we know when to start looking at the calendar and or a date in time, and when does that continue to?
It's funny. It's surprising to me that it took me this long in this podcast to get to this answer, which is it depends. I mean, everything, when I'm asked a sales tax question, usually my first answer is it depends. Because as we've said, there are 45 different economic nexus laws at play right now, which means there are potentially 45 different ways for states to answer that question, what is the measurement period? And thankfully, you know, they don't all answer it 45 different ways. You know, patterns start to emerge. The most common answer, the most common way the states answer that question is that you look to the current or prior calendar year. So if you exceed the threshold in either the current or prior calendar year, you have nexus and you have to start charging tax. But that's not true of every state, right? You just have to know the rule that's in place in the particular jurisdiction that you're worried about. So for example, if you were looking at New York State, our home state, you would find that the measurement period here is basically a rolling four quarter period that is off calendar, follows the sales tax calendar filing period. So it's unique to each state. I often get asked this question just in the tri-state area, right? The tri-state area business could very easily be doing business in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And if we look at the economic nexus rules in just those three states that are right next to one another pretty much geographically, you find three different answers. So New York has that rolling sales tax calendar period. Connecticut has basically a funny period that is, you know, basically a year starting from September and then looking back. And then New Jersey has the normal kind of current or prior calendar year. So three different answers to that one question in just the tri-state area, where most businesses probably in that area sell across those different state lines.
Wow. They certainly do not make it straightforward. And it sounds like a lot of the laws really require companies to be incredibly organized and on top of their record keeping, which I guess is a very good thing. But I'm certain that sometimes the laws even kind of outpace some of that organization. But of course, we'll talk about records more later in the episode when we talk about audits. For now, we're continuing with the discussion of nexus. What about wholesale transactions? How is that dealt with in the world of economic nexus?
Yeah, most states don't tax wholesale transactions. You know, most sales tax are a retail sales tax, which means they tax the end customer, the end user of the product or service. And so if I'm selling you something that you are going to then resell, that's by definition a wholesale transaction, that usually doesn't have sales tax associated with it in most cases. So generally speaking, wholesale transactions aren't taxable. You instead would receive the vendor would receive a resale certificate from its customer saying, hey, I intend to resell this, so don't charge me tax. And that's how you deal with that in most instances.
Okay. And do these nexus laws and I guess the sales tax laws more generally, do they apply equally to the sales of goods and the sales of services?
Well, that depends. I should just have that like on a stock response recorded for most of these questions. It depends. It depends on the state law that imposes the economic nexus. For example, here in New York, it seems to focus exclusively on tangible personal property, sales of tangible personal property. In other states, it's gross sales. So that would mean anything you sell. Some other states use the term retail sales, and that generally means sales subject to tax. Well, then that begs the question, well, are sales of services subject to tax in that state? If they are, then they're contained within that definition of retail sales, and if not, maybe not. So there's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of stuff to think about when you start applying these different economic nexus rules.
Clearly, all the listeners should call their friendly state and local tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ, because this is a complicated topic for sure. And, when in one of our previous episodes, when we had a discussion with Mark Klein and Paul Como about, the historic nature of the state and local tax practice group, it was the sales tax stuff that sort of reared its head first and helped this practice area grow. The nuance is so deep at every level. And I just I find it fascinating. So we've talked about this nexus threshold and trying to figure out this determination of whether the state can fairly subject you to its sales tax laws. And we've talked about, having a certain amount of gross receipts within a specific jurisdiction. But how do you know that that receipt is actually properly sourced, to use an inside term, to that state, to that jurisdiction?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And again, there is some variation here with respect to transactions. But generally speaking, the answer is that sales are sitused or sourced to the location where title or possession changes hands. Now, that's obviously if we're speaking of tangible property. Where title or possession changes hands is usually where the transaction is sourced. But that can raise a whole lot of questions, right? What if I'm selling software, right? So software is not something we typically think of as tangible, but New York State's sales tax law certainly says that it is. Well, if I take a disk and I put software on it and I ship it to someone and sell it, well, that's easy. That's an easy way to kind of understand how the software got sold and where it got sold. But nobody operates like that anymore, right? What's the last time you plugged in a disk into a computer and downloaded, put software directly on your computer? That's just not how business operates now.
I think it was 2003.
There you go. nowadays, businesses use a different model, which is called software as a service. And that allows customers to not have to download any software to their computer, but rather, go through their internet browsers and access it using the internet, so that the software actually stays on the vendor's servers and I just use it using a web portal or their web browser, et cetera. So the question is, in those situations, well, where is that sourced? And, generally speaking, those are sourced to where the end user is accessing the software, where they're located. Sales of services, true services are generally sourced to where the service is performed. So if I, need someone to fix my flat tire or something like that, that service is going to be taxed where that service was performed.
Someone like Netflix must have a heck of a time trying to figure out where their end users actually are. I have to imagine, especially knowing that like just about everyone has one account and gives it out to, their friends, family, their barber, the mailman, and they're just end users all over the place.
But you bet, exactly. and the, that brings up a really good question, because we talked about earlier how records are so important, right? Records are very important to know if you get to a threshold, where's the sale, et cetera. And so knowing, having that information as to where the sale occurs can have a big impact on the liability on audit. But it all goes back to, you know, do you know where this transaction is happening? And for especially newer technology products, that can be a very difficult thing to know.
So all that being said, with the world of economic nexus, my next question for you is physical presence dead? And do I need to worry at this point if I have a salesman in some state other than where my headquarters is located? Because it sounds to me like economic nexus has taken over. So does the traveling salesman need to be considered anymore when I'm thinking about my sales tax compliance?
No, physical presence is not dead. Yes, that business still needs to think about where it's sending its people, because you should think of these economic presence rules not as a shield, right? You should not think of them as a shield, because if you send a person into a state, then you have that traditional physical presence nexus. All those rules are still applicable. And in that situation, I don't care whether your sales are $30,000 or whether they're way below the applicable economic nexus threshold. If you have physical presence, then all $30,000 of those transactions are taxable, assuming what you're selling is taxable. So yes, you still have to worry about physical presence. So don't think, you know, just because I didn't sell into a state and I didn't sell enough into a state, I'm below that state's threshold, don't think you're good, right? If you've got people going in there, if you've got property in there, you could still have a sales tax obligation in that state.
That's interesting. So let's say Johnny Taxpayer has his business and it's located, headquartered in New York, but he has an employee who is a salesperson and they live in California. That person is only making sales and none of those sales are sourced to California. Does that person still have to pay sales tax in California or file returns even?
Well, no, not if none of the sales are occurring in California, right? So if none of the sales are in California, even though the person is physically there, there would be no sales tax obligation in California. But let's say that traveling salesman may be based in California, but let's say they physically travel to, you know, maybe Arizona, or they go to, you know, a neighboring state to California. Suddenly, that traveling salesman's physical presence in another state can create nexus for the business for all sales that happen in that other state. And so there, yes, the business would have to worry about complying with that other state's sales tax laws, even if the sales that traveling salesman made fall below the economic nexus threshold.
Very interesting.
And one other point on that, you know, it gets really confusing here, is that different types of taxes have different nexus rules. Right. So that traveling salesman, because they're physically going into the states, could very easily trigger nexus for sales tax purposes. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that same business has income tax nexus, because there is a federal rule that you know, allows businesses. It's called Public Law 86-272 that allows businesses to avoid income tax nexus in certain circumstances, especially with respect to traveling salesmen. Now, there are a whole bunch of rules and requirements with respect to that federal law. And certainly within the past, you know, year or two, there have been publications kind of restricting its applicability in the modern world with respect to like online transactions, et cetera. But the takeaway here is that the rules for nexus and where you have to comply with a state's tax laws change based on the type of tax we're talking about.
Folks, it all connects. It's like the original Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's just overlapping. And with that comment, I have confirmed my status as not just a tax nerd, but also just a nerd in general. Anyway, moving forward. So, Joe, what if I have nexus and I didn't know? Because I hadn't listened to this podcast episode yet, and I wasn't so well educated on the topic of economic nexus and physical presence nexus.
Yep. So the situation there is that, you know, you've got this period worth of liability that you didn't really realize until just now, right? So you've been selling into a state that exceeds the economic nexus thresholds, or you've been selling into a state where you have physical presence, didn't realize that you had to collect that state sales tax. And what do? Well, you know, just about every state has either a formal or informal voluntary disclosure program. So there is an option to voluntarily come forward, say, hey, I made a mistake. A lot of businesses nowadays are in that situation, especially with all these, you know, different Nexus rules. And what they do is they give up their anonymity, right? They come forward and say, hey, I have a liability. And in exchange for that, the state says, okay, well, thanks for coming forward. I'm going to give you something in return. And what they give is typically a limited look back, usually anywhere from 3 to 4 years in most states. So they'll say, even if you've been selling into the state for the past 10 years, we'll only look at the last 3 or 4. And they'll also agree to not impose any penalties. So typically what you end up paying in most states is just the tax liability and applicable interest.
Very interesting. So it's basically a come forward with, you know, clean hands and in good faith, and we'll kind of not punish you, essentially.
Exactly.
Well, that's great. It's good. It's a good thing that states are employing these kinds of programs because, as we've discussed and as I've already stated many times on this episode, this is a very nuanced and intricate area of the law, and it is unsurprising that people make those kinds of mistakes just from lack of knowledge. So, Joe, one last question here on the topic of Nexus. Can you tell us a little about marketplace facilitator rules? Because I know that's an issue that comes up in Nexus that some of our listeners might want to know a little bit more about.
Sure. So first, you know, what the heck is a marketplace facilitator, right? That's typical tax speak. That's not, you know, natural language that we use. But a marketplace facilitator is someone who helps transactions occur, helps vendors and customers come together to complete a sale. And so a marketplace facilitator, that's Amazon, that's Etsy. You know, that's the big marketplaces that we think of online nowadays. And the principle at work here is the same thing that was at work where I'd rather go after the business than all of the individual customers. Well, now states can do that one step better, right? Now, instead of going after the individual businesses to collect the tax, they're going to go after the marketplace to get all the businesses that conduct transactions on their platform. So rather than going to all the different businesses that sell on Amazon, I'll go to Amazon and I will collect the tax that way. Again, it's efficiency. And so every state that has a sales tax has now passed an economic nexus marketplace facilitator law that says, hey, marketplaces, you guys have the obligation to collect and remit the tax if your sales into our state exceed our economic nexus thresholds.
Makes me picture those Russian nesting dolls and like the tiniest little one on the inside is good and the states are just trying to get that big one that houses the rest of them. So this brings our Nexus discussion to, I think, a good stopping point. And it's a topic that we probably could talk about for hours on its own. But we'll pick up this conversation in our next episode, which will be part 2 of the sales tax overview. Thanks for joining us for another episode of State Tax Talks. If you're interested in listening to more episodes, we're available on all platforms where podcasts can be found, including YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo, please give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're in need of a tax professional, you can contact the tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ. Go to www.hodgsonruss.com for more information. And until next time, I'm Joe Tantillo, and this is State Tax Talks. Catch you later, tax fans.
The comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are the opinions of the speakers and not the official opinion of the Hodgson Russ Law Firm.